All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the tornado, Tony Pentecal.
Tom?
Psychic Bob. All
right. So we're going to have a little bit of a tape delay here of a few days for the show. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We're going to air it live on Thursday, but it's going to be taped. But we got a ton of stuff to talk about. We didn't even get to talk about the UFC show we missed last week of Rich Franklin getting knocked the fuck out there in grand fashion in the first round by Kung Lee with a nice right hook. That was a pretty interesting little card there all around, but main event was a surprise. We thought it wasn't going to be nothing like that, but it was a little different than I expected for sure.
Let me just change the topic very quickly, Tom. Is anybody following what's breaking online right now?
What is that?
All I know is the report that now there's conflicting reports on, you know, what's going on right now, but it's tonight. And I know, and I've criticized the guy many times in the past. He's not a favorite of mine. Hector Camacho Sr. was shot in Puerto Rico tonight and during a drive-by shooting.
Oh, my God.
One report has him in critical condition, but expected to pull through. But another report coming from a Puerto Rican site, which I'm just reading from Iceman John Scully right now, is reporting he died from his injuries.
Hmm. Who knows there?
Literally has been breaking over the last 20 or so minutes. Because John Scully actually wrote on there about 28 minutes ago, rest in peace, Hector Camacho, was a thrill to know you. And then other people are typing in asking, like, is it true? And then some of them saying he's not dead yet, critical condition. Others saying he's in a coma now. Someone else has been reported he's dead. Someone else said he's going to pull through. You know, I don't know. I'm just pretty much following everything as it's breaking right now. And like I said, and Tom, I know you haven't been with us, you know, as long, but Rich can tell you, I've never been a fan of Hector Camacho. I've never been a fan of his fighting style. You know, I always thought it was more of a, as I would call him, an un-macho style, you know, more defense, kind of running sometimes. I was never a fan of his character.
So does that make you a suspect?
Window tonight when I did go to the one local drugstore. When I say that, I mean pharmacy.
Oh, okay.
To get some Powerball numbers because I want to retire early. but I do have witnesses to collaborate that I was there.
All right.
And
20 minutes is not enough to get to Puerto Rico.
I've never been a fan of his. I never liked really his persona and some of his outlandish behavior. I never grabbed into him. And I think what really kind of turned me off to him was when I was first getting back into boxing. I remember watching his fight with Ray Boom Boom Mancini in 1989 and watching it with my dad. And my dad was just livid because we all know that Boom Boom Mancini won that fight. So, and then of course his win over Vince at the end, which kind of pissed me off. And then some of his fights that were just so, they were not entertaining to watch. And then, of course, he had a couple of, rough defeats to guys like Chavez, Peter Trinidad, and De La Hoya.
Well, we'll see what happens there. I guess we got to wait for the news cycle to pan out.
Whether you like the guy or not, I mean, I think all of us, you know, we send our prayers, you know, that the reports of this are premature and that he does pull through. And if not, you know, may God bless his soul and, you know, I mean, what else can you say? Exactly, I totally agree.
Well, sticking to boxing here, we had a conference call with Ricky Hatton yesterday. I didn't join in, but I got a little snippet here. And I think this was in his introductory remarks before they even asked questions, but he says, I'm sure you're going to ask me why I came back. I was hard fighter, always fought with a lot of heart, and was able to dictate fights. So you can imagine when I got destroyed in 2 rounds by Manny Pacquiao, it was very hard for someone who takes so much pride in themselves, even though it was by someone like Manny Pacquiao. As soon as Manny beat me, I went into depression, and that led to problems that were well documented in the tabloids, with suicide attempts and nervous breakdowns and panic attacks. Not speaking to my parents for 2 years, and I'm still not speaking to my parents, which has been very, very hard. Losing my longtime peace, my life for the past 3 years has really turned to mush. So I'm now returning to my boxing career, not just because I got knocked out in 2 rounds by Manny Pacquiao, but I think I let a lot of people down in that period of time, and I'm here to put a lot of ghosts and demons to rest. He also mentioned he wants to fight Paulie Malignaggi next. So, that's your Ricky Hatton news.
Here's my thought process on it. He has a win over Paulie from a couple of years ago, while Paulie really looked okay in that fight. Ricky kind of overwhelmed him and really roughed him up. But Paulie has had a little bit of a resurgence, you know, even scoring a rare knockout. I think my thought process on this would be he would be a safer opponent for a guy like Ricky Hatton, not because he's not a good fighter. Far from it. Paulie's a very talented fighter, but he's not a puncher. And I think what they want to set Ricky up with right now is not only a guy that he's beaten, and he's going to have confidence again, but a guy that he knows there's really no threat to hurt him, to knock him out, bump him up. And I think that's the thought process there. Guys, let me just quickly, I just got another report that just came over the wire. This was a friend of mine, Fred Druden, updates via Fight News. Since Camacho has an artificial respirator in his mouth, information indicates that a bullet is lodged in his brain and the chances of survival are minimal. The sources report that a person traveling with Camacho died of the incident. Yeah, and that part we know. Maybe during the course of the show, I will, soon as they come over the wire, I will read them all, and suspend what we're doing, and, just kind of briefly upload them in there.
Alrighty. Here's a little bit of a UFC story. We know we had to get to the card, but, looking ahead, Alistair Overeem is going to be, suspended until January of next year, but the UFC has been granted permission to promote his fight on February 2nd at UFC 156 against Antonio Bigfoot Silva, and that's going to be in Las Vegas, and that's just a little more than a month after his current 9-month suspension is fulfilled. He still has to go before the Nevada Athletic Commission at its monthly meeting in January to get approved for his license, and that will be early to mid-month, which is going to be pretty close to fight time. Dana White on Saturday acknowledged the special circumstances, confirming to reporters following UFC 154 that they asked for and received permission from the Nevada Commission to go ahead and start promotion on the Overeem fight for 156. That's not to say that he's automatically going to be approved for a new license, but it sort of does say he's automatically going to be approved in the same breath. They claim there's no funny business going on there. It's still up to the committee to decide. But just a little weird story out there. And the article that mentions it says it plays favorites against Nick Diaz, who probably won't get to promote his next fight before he comes off suspension. But he's had a little bit more trouble with the commission, too, so what can you do? Anyway, we got the big UFC 154 card to talk about. Of course, Carlos Condit got pretty wasted by George St. Pierre there, although there was a moment where he looked like he could have knocked out GSP. I think it was pretty much the way I expected, even though we didn't really talk about predictions on this one. I liked Conda to possibly get the upset, but I thought George St. Pierre would just be too well-rounded to lose. And I think that's just about what happened, so.
Yeah, I think George's timing, especially on the takedowns, I think his timing was impeccable. And he did what he had to do. And there was a webpage I came across, and it had 20 unusual facts about UFC 154, and one of the facts was, let's see, hold on just a second here, and I will find it, about the link. Okay, George St. Pierre was knocked down for just the second time in his 19-fight UFC career. He also tied Matt Hughes' record for the most title defenses in UFC welterweight history. And we have one other one here. St. Pierre has fought 125 consecutive minutes without stopping an opponent. But I'm not going to criticize him too much for not stopping Carlos Condit.
No, that was a brutal fight. I mean, a lot of back and forth. And Condit, I don't think he was as active as he could have been, but he was pretty damn active. he was just really aggressive in this fight, and I think maybe he should have thrown more head kicks, because that was what really got GSP in trouble. And,
I was kind of looking at George's eyes there, and they were starting to roll around like a slot machine, you know, when you get the three and they start moving. But he kept his composure.
And as we saw in some of the other fights, elbows can make a huge difference in the outcome.
Yes.
We had some nasty cuts opened, and then there were some cuts in that fight too, but I'm not sure if they were elbow cuts, but, you know, GSP is known more for his boxing, but, you know, he's definitely giving people some things to think about. After that performance, he got tuned up a little bit, he got roughed up, his face was busted up, and I think judging from that performance, I know he's probably going to get a little better, still healing maybe a little bit from the injury, but I think Anderson Silva wiped the floor with him, just looking at that fight, but you never know what he's going to prepare for differently, but they have been talking a lot about that fight. Anderson Silva has pretty much said no, yes, no, yes, you know, back and forth. Now, after watching it in person at the venue, it seems like he's agreeable to do it. And they're talking about having it at a 170 weight. But had a lot of other fights on that card, the UFC 154 card. A lot of impressive victories. A lot of decisions, too, but we had Martin Kampman in the co-main event, got knocked out by Johnny Hendricks. First round knockout, 46 seconds into the fight, and that was probably, I don't know if it really did get the knockout of the night, but it was pretty nasty.
You know, this was the first time Martin had been knocked out in his entire MMA career.
Yeah, I believe that.
And
tough guy.
And the way it happened, I assume both you guys have seen it, but it was like Hendricks was throwing a right, came in with a short right hand and actually got his arm. I mean, this was something I've never seen before. He got his arm on top of both of Martin's arms, pushed down, and came in with a left over top. Just something so different.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, exactly. Almost like a Wing Chun trapping hands. So the question is now, if Johnny Hendricks hasn't earned a title shot, I don't know who has. So will Silva be jumping? And you say there's talk that Silva would come down to 170?
Right. I heard today.
Well, he must really want that fight, but I haven't heard what George has said about that fight. And apparently we're in the era now of fighters dictating to the management and the promoters who they're going to fight and who they won't fight. So that's interesting. I would feel bad for Hendricks there. I mean, there's so much action at 170. I don't know why George feels that, or why the UFC would feel that George has to fight Anderson.
I don't know why they would do that either, but like we said in the last show, Anderson Silva has said that he's not going to fight until the end of 2013, so I don't know if that's changed either, but he did do an interview recently where he kind of smartened up and said that after GSP, he's going to go after Jones, too, so he's not shying away from either fight now.
Well, we'll find
out.
Time will tell.
Exactly. We also had Francis Carmont fighting Tom Lawler in one of the most boring fights on the card, which is probably why they came up with a split decision. They couldn't decide who won, really, the judges, but they gave it to Carmont. And for two big, huge guys who know how to fight, I thought that was very, a very sloppy, lousy fight.
Well, I would say this, though, that when the Montreal hometown crowd is booing the decision, I think that says a lot. The issue with Lawler, I mean, he's not a super submission guy or a one-punch knockout artist, but I thought he won that fight. I mean, he grinded it out, and but he really seemed like he took it pretty good. The next day on the Underground, well, the entire Underground was lit up about it. That was one of the main complaints they had about the evening was that decision. And someone said, yeah, Tom, and he was posting on there, and they said, yeah, you really came up short and too bad. And he says, oh, don't say too bad. If you have a bad day at work, I'm not going to tell you too bad. I know the risk of it. And I think he may have lost the fight, but I think he picked up some fans.
Now, we also had Rafael Dos Anjos beating Mark Bocek by unanimous decision. That was another technical fight, not so much boring, but you know, a lot of back and forth there. But
yeah, he just seemed to be a step ahead of Bocek in that one.
Right. And what else we got here? We got if I can get it to come up here, Pablo Garza beat Mark Hominick by unanimous decision, and Hominick, if you remember the Jose Aldo fight, is no stranger to big lumps on the head, and he got a few more on Saturday night. Yeah, it's just tough to watch a guy take that much facial damage.
This is Hominick's fourth loss in a row in the UFC, so see where he goes.
Right. Patrick Cote beat Alessio Sicara by disqualification. Punches to the back of the head in one of the more confusing fights of the night. Sicara was dominating, really, at the point that the fight was called. And threw probably about four or five shots to the back of Cote's head. So, you know, it looked like Sicara won the fight. It was stopped. And then the announcement came over the speakers that, hey, Cote won by disqualification. And the crowd was really booing too when they showed the replay, so everybody could see how many shots were landed to the back of Cote's head. But I would have liked to see more of a fight on that one, than you never like to see a disqualification.
Now do I sense a rematch coming here with that?
Yeah, they pretty much already guaranteed one, so I think we're gonna.
I know that happened to me once. And even though I got the win, it didn't feel like I did.
Right.
All of a sudden I'm getting hit in the back of the head and there was a disqualification, but I didn't feel good about it.
Right.
So let's hope they can get back in and go after it again, because both guys have that exciting, you know, let's just stand and bang and get it on style. So I'd like to see him again.
And we had Cyril Diabate continuing his career with a win over Chad Griggs. It was a beautiful rear naked choke submission. Diabate looked really good in that fight, and Griggs looks pretty lost.
Well, yeah, here's it was almost with a few of the people I was watching it with, we thought we were in a time warp going back to 1994, you know, with the old I'm just gonna bum rush him. That's my style. I'll just charge in and bum rush him. Oh, Griggs, what are you thinking?
Right.
And especially coming down from heavyweight, I kind of felt that maybe Griggs would look better, and if there was going to be an underdog to pick, it was him, and, well, I'll have my crow raw on that one. Boy. I mean, so I wonder where Griggs has been training. I mean, it's okay to be aggressive, but he wasn't even trying to throw any punches.
No.
That I've seen, and I mean, I think that we learned from square one that, you know, if you're trying to take someone down, you're at least, even if you're not, if your boxing skills aren't there, at least act like they are. I mean, try to get your opponent to think everything is, his problem is up there, and then shoot in. Not just make a wild bum rush with your arms flying out 90 degrees. That was pathetic. I mean, I don't know where he trains or how he got to where he is. Some of the conspiracy theorists were thinking that the fact that he's English and they want that English market. So maybe that had something to do with him keep getting staying in the UFC, but I'd have to question if they're going to resign him.
Well, we know Dan Hardy got kept after 4 losses in a row, so.
That's what I mean, yeah.
He's done some things for marketing reasons in the past like that. But next fight was John McDessie versus Sam Stout, and I used to think until this fight that Sam Stout was one of the best boxers in MMA, but now I guess I could say that John McDessie is. This is a fight that Tony would have loved to watch because it was almost entirely on the feet and very little kicks. It was mostly punches, and McDessie had a beautiful jab just peppering Stout in the face. And just Stout would just walk into it time and time again. And just a beautiful...
Yeah, I don't know if it was Stout's defense that was off or the other way around, you know. But, yeah, he, in fact, a little bit of the weird trivia. Sam Stout holds the UFC lightweight record for most significant strikes landed, 792. Now, I don't know who counts this stuff, but... And Stout... just tied John Fitch as having been involved in the most decisions in UFC history.
Wow.
So, and I guess I better shut up or I'll be getting the record for the most inane facts about an event. But, yeah, so Stout, I guess it's back to the drawing board for him.
And we also had Antonio Carvalho beat Rodrigo Dam by a split decision. That wasn't one of the fights I really watched that closely. Kind of tuned out on that one. I did watch Matt Riddle beating John McGuire by decision. Riddle looked pretty good in that fight and just totally dominated it and just really, I mean, even Joe Rogan mentioned how it's hard to believe that he's had his whole career in the UFC. But it's funny, he's in the news this week because he wants medical marijuana to be treated better in MMA. There's a big story on SB Nation, I guess, here, all about how he wants them to change the system. He's been caught once for it, and I guess this time they had him checked multiple times before the fight, and they were going to pull him off the card completely if he tested positive before the fight. So he says he quits 2 to 3 weeks before the fight. But he is a medical marijuana card-carrying member, I guess, in Nevada. And he's just upset about the whole situation. He would like to smoke more because when he doesn't smoke, he pretty much says he's a complete asshole.
Well, what an idiotic thing to admit. I don't understand some people's mindset.
He says, I like being the nice guy, so when I use, I'm a very nice guy, and everybody around me loves me more. I'm just a much more pleasant person to be around.
Okay.
And we just mentioned this a few weeks ago about Xanax. Forrest Griffin got busted for Xanax, and there's no suspension there. And Riddle actually did make a good point. He said the unfortunate part is, you know, in this world, people are okay if you take Xanax, testosterone, and all these other drugs as long as the doctor prescribes them. But if you're prescribed medical marijuana because of your issues, it's not acceptable, and they really frown on it. So, Matt Riddle likes to toke it up. But I don't think he's going to be able to do it anytime soon. Legally, anyway. before a fight, too close to a fight anyway. We also had Ivan Menjivar beat Azamat Gashimov by armbar submission in the first round, and Darren Elkins had a unanimous decision win over Steven Seiler. And that's it for that one. I know we had some boxing over the weekend, but I don't think I have any roundup story here.
Well, that's why you got the boxing.
I guess so.
We had three major fights over the weekend. One was a pretty significant upset. The other two played out as most people expected them to. First, we travel over to Great Britain. For Carl Froch in his first fight after his impressive win over Lucien Bute, fighting a Philadelphia fighter by the name of Youssef Bak. I don't know Youssef personally, but I have followed his career, and I know there were some people in Philadelphia that I know were really trumping him up and saying that he's going to surprise Carl, and because Youssef was normally fighting at 175, he's coming down to 158 for the thing. So he's going to be big, he's going to be physical, he's got speed. He's going to be able to use his movement to offset Froch. He sometimes, you know, tends to be a little flat-footed and, you know, can be outmaneuvered. If you go back and watch his fight with Andre Ward and Carson's fight with Jermaine Taylor and Mikel Kessler. Didn't happen that way. Froch came right out there, took it right to Youssef Mack, dropped him in the first, hurt him in the second, went to his body in the third, and he took the air right out of him, put him down to the 10 count. Very impressive win by Carl Froch. Then we go over to the card that was on HBO. our first part of the night was a major upset. Jonathan Banks, who most recently was known for training Vladimir Klitschko for his fight a couple weeks ago, he stepped in to fight up-and-coming heavyweight prospect Seth Mitchell. Seth Mitchell was being daunted as maybe the guy that could be the next American heavyweight out there. He, in his last fight, knocked out Philadelphia's Chaz Witherspoon. But he was rocked in that spicy bad, and he had to hold up. Well, Justin Banks rocked him and dropped him, and there was no holding on. So Banks scored a pretty significant upset, knocking Mitchell down three times and finishing him off in the second round. Now, which poses the question, where does Banks go from here? Because he obviously just put his name in there as a serious player, and the one question they were kind of asking him, and he was kind of trying to skirt around it a little bit, was, are you going to fight the man you just trained? And he was more just trying to give praise to Emmanuel Stewart, the late great Emmanuel Stewart, you know, who always had faith in him and taught him everything he knew. And then in the main event was another awesome coming out party for Adrian Broner. I know Adrian sometimes, he's a guy that's you either love him or you hate him. I know some people that love Adrian Broner. He's fast, he's flashy, you know, he's got a lot of charisma. Other people think, you know, he makes really what he really wants to talk about. And sometimes he does. But there's no mistaking about it, the kid can fight. He went out there and he tore Antonio DeMarco apart. The fight went 8 rounds. I don't think Broner lost 8 seconds of it. You know, he hit DeMarco with everything but the kitchen sink, and then he finally floored him in the 8th round, which prompted DeMarco's corner to throw in the towel. So now, it's like you're looking at all these unbelievable possibilities. Now, Broner just moved up to the lightweight division. He wasn't able to make, 130 anymore. So he just moved up. And now, you know, you're looking, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for the kid. I mean, you got guys like Yuriyokis Gambelis, who was maybe a weight class or below, but he's another one because unbelievable speed and unbelievable talent. That fight you'd have to watch in slow motion just so you could see the punches. Because those two are so fast. If you watch it at normal speed, it's going to look like you have the fast forward going on. You got Brandon Rios, who's just a tough, rough guy, all-action fighter. I mean, you got a lot of possibilities for Adrian Broner out there. It's good that he got that good showcase on HBO, And like I said, he's the type of guy that you either want to watch him to see him win or want to watch him to see him lose. But either way, you're going to watch him.
All right. Well, there's another big boxing story I saw this week about Oscar De La Hoya and Bob Arum and their little feud. This article calls it a long simmering Cold War. And I guess they can't find a way to work together, and it's keeping a lot of good fights from being made. Some of the potential fights that could be worked out if these two guys were had a better relationship. We have Abner Mares and Nonito Donaire, two of the best 122-pounders in the world. And you just mentioned Brandon Rios, and I guess Lucas Matisse should be fighting at some point, but I guess they can't work out a deal because they're owned by those two camps, or managed by those two camps, I should say. It's kind of ironic because Arum promoted the golden boy himself, Oscar De La Hoya, for many years in his early career. But they had a nasty split in early 2001, and the breakup became ugly with accusations flung from both sides, including De La Hoya's 2001 remarks, in which he accused Arum of intentionally holding back Mexican fighters. And Arum speculated that Oscar took a dive in his 2006 loss to Bernard Hopkins.
So it's just not about money now. Now that sounds personal.
Yeah.
That sounds very personal. Woo! So I hadn't followed it that close, and I just kept assuming it was just a money thing, but now this is even worse.
Yeah, I had never heard that either before I saw this. But Oscar said he's willing to work with anyone to make the fights. He says, we're obviously not going to beg. Hey, Bob, please work with us. The bottom line is he doesn't want to work with us. What can we do? So that tells a lot about the story, too, that Arum is more pissed than De La Hoya. But anyway, in reference to a possible showdown between Rios, who is promoted by Top Rank, and Matisse, who fights for Golden Boy, De La Hoya said he would be willing to meet Arum halfway, literally. He says, I'm willing to meet Bob Arum at the state line because it's a long walk. You know, it doesn't mention all the other possibilities that fights that could be made, but those two are two big fights, and you know, if those are there, then there's other ones too, I'm sure, that are being held up by this little feud. But let's go back to the UFC here, a little MMA news. The Ultimate Fighter, going back to Wednesdays, like we said, was probably a better night in our multiple discussions on this. Back in October, I guess, they announced this the first time, but it's just starting to make the news cycle.
Here's the question now. The FX executives, last I had read, it's been a few days, but Dana was announcing that, and then the FX executives were saying not so fast.
Really?
They agreed.
I haven't heard anything about them, but this article says the show Moving to a Better Night was announced by FX Executive Vice President Chuck Saftler back in October. So I guess they are on board, or they were in October.
Okay, let's hope so.
And that season is the 17th season of Tough, and it's going to be John Jones versus Chael Sonnen as the coaches. I don't see what weight it's going to be, but maybe it's somewhere in here. It debuted in 2005 on Monday nights. Didn't know that. It was an instant hit. Saftler, in October, made a veiled threat at Spike TV, indicating they were looking at going to war with them next year when Spike begins broadcasting Bellator programming. It is believed Spike will air two Bellator first-run shows, the weekly fights as well as the reality show. The night of the week has yet to be announced for either show, with the fights show starting in January. The announcement is expected to be imminent. And Bellator has been running on Friday nights, so that would be interesting to see how they handle that.
Guys, I got another update here for you on the Hector Matos situation. The latest report that I'm reading now, he's taken to St. Paul's Hospital in Rio Piedras. He's listed in grave condition. Police say his case took place in the van that held the shooting with them in the area of Jardim de Catano. They arrested one of the suspects around 9 o'clock p.m. I did see another report saying that the bullet was possibly not in his brain as originally reported, but if he survives, there is a possibility that he will not be able to walk. And once again, all reports that are, are breaking. So, you don't know how accurate some of them are, but I felt that the duty to at least report what is being put out there.
All right. Well, thanks for that one. Someone who's injured a lot less than Hector Macho Camacho, Shane Carwin, just announced a torn knee. It's going to keep him from fighting Roy Big Country Nelson. And I don't think he injured it in the shot put of the coach's challenge on the Ultimate Fighter. But I was surprised that he beat Roy on that one. I thought that was the only one that Roy was going to win of all the events. But Carwin swept that whole thing. But now he's talking about he blew his knee out. Actually, Dana White tweeted the announcement about his injury. And he says, "Wow, it never ends. Carwin blew his knee out. Looking for a new opponent for Roy on the tough finale on FX." And I think they've actually signed somebody already for this fight. It's going to be Matt Mitrione.
Well, which is an interesting fight, but it still kind of takes away the whole purpose of the show. There's no one to blame for it, but...
Well, it seems like it always happens, It's happened a few times, but, the... The UFC brass always seems to make sure that fight between the coaches eventually happens, even if it doesn't happen on the finale, per se. But lately, they haven't been able to really fulfill that expectation. But we'll see if they do get around to having Carwin and Big Country fight, but... I know the UFC is looking for any excuse to get rid of Nelson. I know Dana White hates him, and he's kind of rubbed the Fertittas the wrong way with some of his remarks, so who knows if Big Country will be around long enough to get that fight done. But Mitrione has been back and forth in recent fights. We don't know what's going on with him. He's definitely a tough guy. He's got some hard, heavy hitting shots. He's a heavyweight, obviously, but these guys were on the Ultimate Fighter, the heavyweights. I don't think they ended up fighting, but I could be wrong on the show. I don't remember them fighting.
I don't remember that either.
I know. Mitrione took out Kimbo on the show, so he's tough. So we'll see how that fight goes. I think my money is on Big Country on that one, but who knows? You never know what kind of transformation these guys go through sometimes when they have a loss on their record and they've been doing well, like Mitrione was until his most recent loss. It just changes them, so... We'll see if he comes back and looks like a different fighter.
Well, there's an old cliche about in MMA there's so many ways to get your ass kicked, but there's also so many ways to improve.
Right.
So, We'll see what Nat can bring.
Exactly. Well, I sent you guys a little video earlier in the week. Might as well read the story here. Any boxing referee knows that accidentally getting in the way of a punch from time to time is an occupational hazard. It's not often, however, that the man in the middle is intentionally targeted by one of the fighters, yet that's exactly what happened to the official taking charge of an amateur bout in Slovenia. Croatia's Kristen Radin was embroiled in his fight against Slovenia's Blaž Sedej when the ref intervened to pull the pair apart during a clinch. But rather than step back and resume the fight, Radin decided to lash out. And this says he planted a fearsome-looking uppercut on the official, but I think it was a right hook. Huge credit to the ref. Despite taking a powerful shot directly to his unprotected face, he managed to stay on his feet and fully conscious, even if a little unbalanced. And as soon as he regained his senses, he got the best revenge possible by instantly disqualifying Radin and announcing Sedej as the winner. He was a small guy, too. Ref, get clocked pretty good.
I thought that was a pretty good guy. Was kind of, doing some grappling and punching power.
Yeah.
I was thinking,
how. And both guys had headgear on, too, so it wasn't a professional fight, I don't think. Or,
yeah, it was like, definitely an amateur fight.
Unless they have different rules over there. But. One of the interesting stories of the week, and it came with a video. I'm sure if you Google referee gets punched, you'll find it. Like I talked about earlier, Anderson Silva's had a little bit of a change of tone and decided that he's going to fight whoever the UFC wants him to fight. GSP's win over Carlos Condit looks like it's definitely a go for the potential super fight between St. Pierre and Silva. Interestingly enough, though, St. Pierre would not commit to the fight after his victory, and Silva never set foot into the octagon, despite Dana White's promises and him being there at the event. But Silva did speak earlier that day about the possibility of fighting St. Pierre. He said, "I have my plans. First, the people are talking Anderson and St. Pierre. Now the people are talking Anderson and John Jones." Usually, Silva would squash any possibility of a John Jones fight, but he seems to have softened his stance on the other big fight. "My first goal is the George St. Pierre fight, the super fight, and the second goal, maybe John Jones. I don't know," Silva said, leaving the decision in the hands of the UFC president. "This is not my decision. This is Dana White's decision." Yes, he had a little talking to some point between his last remarks and these ones. But it's definitely change of tune, and he's starting to sound like a company man there. So my guess is he either got threatened or he got some money thrown in his face to smarten up and fly.
Well, and I would think also that the competition is at the welterweight division at 185. With the possible exception of Chris Weidman, I can't really see any interesting fights for Silva at that division. And 205, what do we see for Jones at this point? So it just seems to me a more natural super fight is for Anderson to move up or, get the catchweight, however we're going to do it. And Anderson's performed quite well at 205. But I'd love to see St. Pierre defend against Johnny Hendrick.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of good fights. I mean, of course, they're trying to groom Nick Diaz against GSP even before his suspension is up, but...
that would be good, too.
Yeah, that would definitely be an interesting fight. And I think there was a story, I didn't read it, but there was a story over the wires recently about how Nick Diaz trashed GSP's performance, so he's gearing up for the fight even while he's suspended. But we do have a couple other things to mention here. Of course, we got this is an interesting story. I have to come up here. It's a guard in a jail is just recently fired for turning the jail into an MMA octagon. Kind of a weird one here. Just gotta wait for it to load up. But while we're waiting, we got the MMA schedule, upcoming fights. There's not another UFC until December 8th, is that right? December 8th, so we got a few weeks there. UFC on Fox 5, Henderson versus Diaz, Nate Diaz on December 8th. It's going to be a good fight. But while we're waiting for all that upcoming schedule and the MMA guard there, did want to mention Ronda Rousey. We had some conflicting reports last week whether or not officially signed with the UFC. And Dana White went on the Jim Rome show and confirmed it. Yes, White said it's official. Ronda Rousey did sign with the UFC. And Strikeforce will reportedly fold in January after one last... right after that announcement, rumors arose that Rousey would move to the UFC and become the first female ever to compete in the Octagon. But Team Rousey was not gushing about the rumors and refused to issue a confirmation. But White is another animal. He said, it's beautiful, but deep down inside, she's a killer. there's also been a question of Santos, who is generally regarded as the world's second-best woman MMA fighter. Used to be the first, but she fights at 145, and it was recently revealed that a cut down to 135 might seriously compromise her health. Over the next 2 years, we've got really good opponents for her, though, White said. It's definitely a positive development for women's MMA, and we'll see where it goes there. Hope it works out.
Well, we can hope, because yeah. that's that will be huge.
Right. So we're still waiting for all this stuff to load. Anybody else got any tidbits? Fill some time. Barely hear you. Well, we do have the upcoming schedule for MMA, and we have tomorrow night. Tough Enough Feasty Bro in the South Carolina in Las Vegas, Nevada. Should be a good show tomorrow night. Vivo Rio Theater in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil will be hosting Mestre do Combate tomorrow night. And we have the 10th anniversary of ZST 33 in Tokyo, Japan on the 23rd, Friday. Actually, the Mestre de Combate is the 22nd, which is Thanksgiving. We got Score Fighting Series 7 from Ontario, Canada on the 23rd. Extreme Fighting Championship Africa 17 from Gauteng, South Africa, also on the 23rd, Friday. We got Super Fight League 10 on Friday from Maharashtra, India. In Mumbai. We have Invasion AFC 14 from Edmonton, Alberta on Friday. And then we got Saturday fights, Open Cage 3, Latvian Top Fighters from Latvia. SFC Tournament 2012 Part 5 from Mainz, Germany. And let's see what else we got here. Gretchen 7, Gretchen, from Tokyo, Japan. Saturday. Malaysian Fighting Championship 6 from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia on Saturday. KO MMA 9 from Hertfordshire, England on Saturday. Monson versus Kang, which you can watch on Sherdog. It's on Saturday from Busan, South Korea. And we have a fight in North Dakota. Hankinson, North Dakota. Battle at the Border 11 from the Cage Inc. on Saturday. And finally on Sunday we have Pancrase Progress Tour 13 from Osaka, Japan. Now, let's go to that guard story. A former Santa Fe County jail guard turned the detention center into his own private mixed martial arts octagon before he was fired last summer, according to documents and two former inmates. The former guard, Anthony Hurtado, allegedly challenged two inmates to fight him in an area of the jail without cameras. It is a...
I can't help it. I'm sorry. Let me just interrupt.
It is a horrible, horrible abuse of power, said Tom Clark, a Santa Fe attorney representing one of the inmates.
Well, he must have got smoked. I mean, come on. That's every inmate's dream. Always telling the guy, take that badge off, punk.
Yeah, right.
You ain't never without that badge. I don't understand why it was such an abuse of power if it was a fair fight. Jeez.
Well, I guess he was strutting his stuff pretty early. It says he was hired at the jail about a year ago, and it didn't take long for him to make a name for himself among the inmates. He liked to liked to let people know he was strong, said Lucas Cullen, a former inmate at the jail. He would even arm wrestle people. Cullen was incarcerated at the jail earlier this year on a probation violation and got to know Hurtado. He had big ears, Cullen said of Hurtado, so I would mess around with him and about his big ears and kind of call him names, and he would call me names back, and it was, really wasn't a big deal. But the good-natured ribbing took an ugly turn in early May. That day, I don't know what got into him, he said. He called me out in front of the wild pod, and he told me, he's all I can choke you out, he told me. I don't know if that's the right quote, but... Oh, he's all like, I can choke you out, I guess is what he's trying to say. Cullen said Hurtado took him to an area of the jail called the Horseshoe, where there are no cameras, and did exactly that, choked him out. After Cullen tapped out and went back into the pod, Hurtado walked through again 10 minutes later. That's when one of the inmates told the guard it hadn't been a fair fight because Cullen had been wearing shower shoes and had immediately slipped and fallen when the fight began. Oh, it gets better. And I said, oh no, we're going to do this again, Cullen said. Sure enough, they said, here's some shoes. So I put on some shoes and went out again into the Horseshoe and did the same thing. The second time was worse for Cullen. That time he messed me up pretty bad, he said. I had a big cut across my forehead. I had a long cut across my arm. My thumb felt dislocated because it bruised real bad on my hand.
Oh,
now, here's
unbelievable.
It gets even better. Esli Dominguez, a former boxer, was one of the inmates watching through the Horseshoe windows. Hurtado was just manhandling Lucas, he said. Dominguez says he stuck up for Cullen, and that's when the guard told him it was his turn to fight and ordered the inmate to go out into the arena or into the area with no cameras. I'm the inmate, he's the guard, Dominguez said. I have to listen to what he says. So the two began brawling. At first he started wrestling me, Dominguez said. He got me in a chokehold and tried to pass me all the way out, and when I flipped him over, he swung a couple times. The fight ended after about 10 minutes when Hurtado heard other guards coming, Dominguez said. But that wasn't the end of the fight club. He came in the next week on his next shift talking about the whole jail was saying I beat him, Dominguez said. Hurtado demanded a rematch until someone was knocked out. We go for like 10 minutes the first time, going at each other, choking each other, he said. Dominguez said they took rest breaks every few minutes, like rounds in a boxing match, before again resuming the fight. Finally, we got into it where we got so tired that we just had to end the fight, he said. It lasted a good 40 minutes. Both Cullen and Dominguez said they had no choice but to fight. I felt like I had to do it, Dominguez said, but I felt like I had to hold back because I didn't want to get into too much trouble if something did happen to him. So when a jail officials heard what happened, they put Hurtado on leave and later fired him. But no one from the jail or Santa Fe County would speak to KRQE News 13 about the incidents because the two former inmates have threatened legal action. David Foster, another attorney representing Cullen and Dominguez, said Hurtado should face criminal charges. Why charges have not been filed against this guard for clearly criminal acts of assault and battery, I don't know, said Foster, a former prosecutor. The Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office investigates crimes at the jail. However, Santa Fe County Sheriff Robert Garcia said neither the inmates nor jail officials told him about these incidents. And things like that, I think, should have been reported to law enforcement to be able to investigate, he said. And, surprisingly enough, Hurtado, the guard, did not return a phone message seeking comment.
Oh, God, loving it.
That was a hell of a story. That was,
Well, I say it's mutual combat. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
And the guard was already fired. I mean, what kind of inmates do we have nowadays filing lawsuits? Jeez. Well, what would the guys back in Alcatraz think about that?
They definitely both have a good case, though. I mean, I think the first guy more than the second guy because he was beaten and then brought back in. I mean, that's pretty bad.
that's true. It does sound like there was a little more coercion the first time.
The other guy, I mean, he at least put the challenge out there. And then, but the fact that the guard said, oh, the whole jail thinks that you beat me the first time. I mean, if all the inmates knew, well, why didn't the other guards know? I mean, come on. Somebody had to tell one of the guards something.
From everything I've heard, there aren't too many secrets in places like that.
No.
So
watch out if you're in prison listening and you got a new guard named Hurtado.
Well, now let's keep an eye on his blossoming career, his fledgling career. See if we can see Hurtado in some of the smaller shows.
Maybe. We'll see. But anyway, I think that about does it for us. I really don't have much more material.
Well, my only other thing, I hope I can have a little bit of sugar with my crow on the Rich Franklin fight, but if you recall my prediction, I was saying that I felt he should have tried to get the fight to the ground, where he had the edge in size, strength, physicality, and technique. And for whatever reason, he either thought he could win on the feet or just was unable to even try to get it to the ground. I don't know. But as I said, Kung Lee is a hard guy to prepare for, and he's so very unorthodox. So,
and I guess he's moving away from more of the Sanshu type of style that he started MMA using primarily too.
Yeah, because if you remember, he won the fight with just a straight right punch. Nothing really that fancy. So. Be interesting to see where both of them go. I hate to see Rich hanging up. I mean, there's all this talk about maybe it's time for Franklin to retire. I hate to see that. I've been a huge fan of his, but I guess he'll make that decision.
Yeah, I think he'll fight one more time. We'll see.
Yeah.
But anyway, definitely want to keep an eye out for him and see what happens.
Yeah.
Kung Lee is... probably going to get a couple more opportunities in there against some bigger names in the coming months. We'll see. But I've always liked him. He's a good fighter. He's a good guy. He's very short with his answers. My first interview with him, he was all yes, no, okay, sounds good. It sounded like he wanted to say as little as possible in our first interview. Then the second interview we do with him, he was more wanting to talk about his movie career than his fight career. So, now he seems more committed to the fights. Although, I heard that there was a pretty big Japanese action star in the stands for the Franklin fight. And he's like a huge fan of Kung Lee's. And so that actually, they said that could bring a lot of new eyes to the UFC. Because this guy is so well known in Japan, like people will do whatever he does. So if he likes MMA, they'll start watching it. We'll see. Well, that's all we got. I want to thank our sponsors, Cocaine Energy Drink, ScienceShop.com, and Milifidel, MilifiDel.com. And thanks, everybody, for stopping by and listening. We'll be live again next Thursday, probably with a very good guest from the MMA or boxing world. We'll see. We'll find out. And till then, adios. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys, let's enjoy the fights. I'd like to wish everybody a happy and safe Thanksgiving holiday. Last report that I got on Hector Camacho before we, break for, the show is no further updates right now. It reported he was unconscious when he was brought to the medical facility. I've had some conflicting reports, but it does appear that the notices of his death are premature right now. Some reports have gone out that he had passed away. Those are being rescinded as being premature, so that is a positive thing. But that's all right now. If anything else, obviously I'm sure Rich will have stuff posted on our site. And like I said, whether you're a fan of his or whether you weren't a fan of his, I personally was not. But it's still a human being, and he's very talented fighter. He represented the sport of boxing. Sometimes not always in the best way, but he always had people talking. And we, I think on behalf of myself and the rest of, our colleagues out here, I'd like to, wish him the best and, make God look for him, look out for him.
Sure.
Wow. There you have
it. And other than that, have a great holiday, everybody, and hasta la vista. I will talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Good night, folks.